Back then, I was still a college student, delivering pizzas to make ends meet. Most nights were the same routine, except that one. It was the kind of night that still keeps me up. It was around 10:30 p.m. when I got an order for a house on the outskirts of town. The place was isolated and old, with overgrown grass and dim lights barely glowing through the curtains. Something about it felt wrong from the moment I pulled into the driveway. I walked up, pizza in hand, and knocked. A man answered, looking disheveled. Might be in his mid-40s. Dark circles hounded under his eyes.
Pizza delivery,
I said, trying to sound upbeat. He looked confused. You sure you got the right place? I didn't order any pizza.
This is 1489 Oakright, right?
I asked, double-checking the slip. He hesitated. Yeah, that's my address, but no one here ordered anything. Thinking I might have screwed up, I asked if he could check with the others in the house. He turned and called back.
Babe, did you order a pizza?
A woman's voice responded from further inside, followed by two toddlers poking their heads around the corner. They all exchanged confused looks. No one had ordered anything. I pulled out my phone and dialed the number listed on the order. After a few rings, a raspy voice answered.
Yeah, that's the right address.
They're saying no one here ordered pizza. Are you sure?
The voice on the other end chuckled, low and eerie.
I'm in the shed at the bottom of the driveway. Bring it here.
I froze, my heart skipping a beat.
The shed?
The man at the door overheard me and looked pale, his eyes wide with sudden realization.
We don't have anyone staying in the shed, he said, his voice shaky.
The woman came to the door, clutching a robe tightly around herself.
What's going on, honey?
I repeated what I'd heard, and the air around us seemed to turn heavy. The man grabbed a flashlight from inside, ignoring his wife's protests.
I'll check it out,
he muttered, clearly unnerved. I followed him down the driveway. My feet were heavy as a sick feeling twisted in my gut. The shed at the end was barely visible in the dim light. Rotting wood, broken windows, a loose padlock hanging from the door. Every step closer made my skin crawl. The man aimed his flashlight at the door and pulled it open. The hinges let out a slow, eerie creak. The smell hit us first, damp, moldy, with a foul undertone. His flashlight flickered across the inside. There, in the corner, was a dirty mattress, surrounded by crumpled blankets, old food wrappers, and empty cans. The walls were covered in scratches. Words.
I see you. I hear you. I watch you.
My stomach churned. Someone had been living here, right under their noses, watching them. For how long? Before I could process it, my phone buzzed again, the same number. My hand shook as I answered.
Hello?
The voice was clearer now, calm and cold.
You should have left the pizza at the door.
Then, from inside the house, we heard it. A loud crash, followed by the unmistakable sound of heavy footsteps. My heart dropped. We ran back to the house. The woman was at the door, frozen, pale as a sheet.
Someone's inside,
she whispered, her voice barely audible. The man, still holding the flashlight, grabbed a kitchen knife and entered the house, his steps cautious. I followed. My pulse raced. The lights flickered as we stepped into the living room, and there, standing in the corner, was a figure, a filthy man with wild eyes and a twisted grin, holding a crowbar. He didn't belong here, yet he was, standing among their family's belongings like he'd been waiting for this chance all his life.
I told you, Julian, I'd always be there, waiting for you.
He stared directly at Julian as if trying to make a point. Before I could react, the man with the knife lunged at him. The intruder swung the crowbar, catching him on the arm. The sound of bone hitting metal echoed through the room. I grabbed the closest thing to me, a lamp, and smashed it over the intruder's head. He staggered, then collapsed, unconscious. Panting, I backed away, shaking, the broken lamp still in my hands. The family stood frozen. Julian clutched her children tightly and sobbed. The man called the police, his hand trembling as he relayed the details. The hobo was an obsessed ex-lover and couldn't let go, even after Julian had moved on years ago. They dragged the psychopath out, but as they shoved him into the back of the squad car, he turned and smiled.
"I can never let you go,"
he promised, just loud enough for me to hear. I never delivered to that neighborhood again. It's strange, the way you never think it'll happen to you. Those stories on the news, the tragic ones, where someone's loved one disappears. I always thought they happened to other people, not us, not my mom. But I guess that's what everyone thinks, until it does happen. I was 13 when it happened. It was just a regular Thursday night. She kissed me goodbye before heading out. Her eyes were tired, but still filled with a kind of warmth only my mom could give.
"I'll be back soon,"
she said. She never did, and I didn't know until it was too late. That night stretched on endlessly. I sat in the dark, watching the clock tick, hoping any second the door would creak open, and she'd walk in with that tired smile. Midnight came and went. Then, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, still nothing. The silence in the house grew louder, suffocating, and dread started creeping in. It was around 3 o'clock when my phone buzzed with a live location.
"Mom?"
She was in a parking lot. But why? My stomach twisted. I called her again and again, but every call went straight to voicemail. Each unanswered ring made my heart pound harder. Was she stuck? Hurt? In danger? I couldn't sit still anymore. I grabbed my hoodie and bolted out the door. The streets were cold and empty. When I got to Waverly Roads, I just couldn't walk anymore. Clutching my phone tight, I ran faster than I ever had in my life. My mind racing, praying that I'd find her car, that everything would be fine, and that this would all just be a misunderstanding. But when I turned the corner into that dark parking lot, I knew her car was there, parked at an odd angle, headlights still on, but no sign of her. That's when I saw her, lying in the lot, her body twisted in a way that bodies aren't supposed to twist. My heart stopped. I wanted to scream, but no sound came. She was so still. Her face was pale, her eyes open but lifeless. It was like the air had been sucked out of the world, and all I could hear was the blood rushing in my ears. I dropped to my knees beside her, trembling.
"Mom."
The word barely made it past my lips. I reached out, touching her cold hand, and that's when I heard it. The crunch of gravel behind me. A slow, deliberate step. I whipped around, my breath caught in my throat. And there she was, Miranda, my father's wife, my stepmother, though I never called her that. She stood there in the dim light. In her hand was something I couldn't process at first.
"You shouldn't have come here, kid,"
she said, slinging the rope in the air.
You did that? Why?
It wasn't a question. She took a step closer, her smile growing darker.
"Custody, honey. Your father wanted you back, but the bitch wasn't ready to let go. So, we had to make sure she couldn't fight anymore."
My chest tightened with horror. This wasn't just about Mom. This was about me.
"Don't worry. Your dad knows too. Family means everything,"
she said, as if it was the simplest thing in the world. She started moving towards me, slow and steady, like a predator toying with its prey.
"Now, why don't you come with me, and we'll make sure everything gets sorted out."
I didn't need a better trigger. Sprinted across the lot, the cold air biting at my face as Miranda's footsteps echoed behind me. She was faster than I expected, closing the distance as I weaved between parked cars, trying to put anything between us. My legs burned, my lungs screamed, but I couldn't stop. If I stopped, she'd catch me, and I knew what would happen if she did. I could hear her breathing, heavy and ragged, just behind me.
You can't run forever, kid. We'll find you, just like we found that hoe.
Dad, Miranda wasn't lying.
The word sliced through me, and I felt my chest tighten with fear. I wasn't running just for me now. I was running for my mother. Up ahead, I saw the faint glow of a streetlight. Hope surged through me as I spotted the small, nondescript building, a police station. I pushed myself harder, every step agonizing as I neared the door. My fingers grazed the cold metal handle just as I felt Dad's hand grab the back of my hoodie, yanking me backward. I stumbled, his breath hot on my neck, his grip tightening.
Didn't your mom tell you? You're coming with us,
he hissed. In a moment of pure adrenaline, I twisted, slipping out of his grasp and throwing myself at the door. It flung open, and I collapsed inside, gasping for air. The officer behind the desk stood up, startled, as I slammed the door shut and locked it.
They killed Mom!
I screamed, tears streaming down my face.
They're outside! Please help me!
The officer's face paled as he rushed to the window, peering out into the night. Miranda and Dad were convicted, but I knew everything wasn't finished, for in the dark, I'd always hear Mom screaming. Delivering pizzas wasn't exactly my dream job, but it paid the rent. That Friday night seemed like any other, but then I got an order to deliver to the local hospital. A hospital at 11 p.m.? I figured maybe the night shift needed a break from whatever sad excuse for food they served in the cafeteria. I pulled up to the front of Holy Spirit Hospital. The parking lot was eerily deserted. The place always gave me the creeps. I walked inside. At the front desk was a half-asleep receptionist, slumped over, headphones in. Pizza delivery? He didn't look up, just pointed toward a hallway. Junior doctor's on second floor. Break room, elevator down that way. But the elevator down the hallway wasn't working. Rather than going back to the receptionist, I walked further and saw another elevator. It looked old. Its doors creaked as they opened. Without thinking much, I stepped inside. The doors slid behind me, and that's when I realized I wasn't alone. There was a man standing in the corner wearing scrubs. He looked off. His skin was clammy, pale, like he hadn't seen daylight in years. His face was twisted in anger, or maybe pain, but his eyes, they were dead, flat, unblinking, staring straight ahead. Rough shift? He didn't respond, just stood there, a yellow wristband on his hand. I tried to speak again, figuring he was just too tired to chat. You a doctor or patient? Nothing. Not even a grunt this time. I glanced up at the elevator panel, watching the floor slowly tick by. The lights inside flickered for a second. That's when I heard it. A soft thud, like something heavy dropped just above us.
Did you hear that?
I turned to look at him. The man's head had jerked slightly to the side. His neck snapped at an unnatural angle. His eyes, once staring ahead, were now locked onto me, wide and wild.
Thud!
Louder this time. The sound of something or someone slamming against the top of the elevator. I backed up, my breath catching in my throat, and frantically pressed the button for the next floor. I didn't care where it stopped. I just needed out of that elevator. The man didn't move, didn't respond. His twisted neck stayed locked on me, his lips curling up in a strange manner. He looked sick. I suddenly remembered that the hospital had a specialized mental ward, and it spooked me. That man could probably be a mental patient. Finally, the doors opened, and I bolted out of the elevator. I turned around to catch my breath, and the elevator door slammed shut. He was still inside, but as the doors closed, I swore I saw his hand reach out toward me, like he was trying to follow. The hallway was silent. too silent. As I walked, my footsteps echoed too loudly. I couldn't shake the feeling that someone or something was watching me. Hello? No answer. I passed another door, the window smeared with something dark. I squinted, stepping closer when suddenly... Bang! The door rattled violently, as if something inside had slammed into it. I jumped back, heart pounding in my chest. I stared at the door, holding my breath, waiting for something to burst through. But after a moment, the hallway fell back into silence. That is when I saw what the sign on the door read. Mortuary. I was done. I wasn't delivering anything. I needed to leave. I turned on my heel and sprinted toward the stairwell, throwing the door open and barreling down the stairs two at a time. When I reached the first floor, I flung the door open, nearly crashing into a young doctor standing in the hallway. Whoa, slow down. You all right? I couldn't catch my breath, words spilling out as I tried to explain.
There's a guy. Elevator. Yellow wristband. Something's wrong, man. Could be a psycho on the loose.
His face went pale as soon as I mentioned the wristband. Wait, yellow? Are you sure? I nodded, still panting. His expression tightened. That's not possible. The yellow wristbands, they're for the deceased. From the critical care unit. I froze. My skin prickled as a cold sweat broke out across my forehead. I stammered, trying to process what he was saying.
But he was in the elevator with me.
That elevator's been closed for months. My throat became heavy. A strange shiver ran down my spine. I didn't argue. I didn't wait for more explanations. I just turned and bolted for the exit. But as I reached the doors, the hospital's automatic doors slid open by themselves, as if expecting me. A cold gust blew through, and then I heard it. The sound that would haunt me for weeks after. A soft, rasping voice from behind me, too close to my ear.
Next time I follow you.